Word this week. I'm Joey Peters.
I'm Matthew Reichbach. And it's the Weekly Word. And we're here, we're going to have environmental reporter Laura Paskus on. How are you doing, Laura?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And we're going to have, we're just going to talk about some copper mining. Maybe we'll touch on uranium and whatever else we get to discussing. We'll get to that discussion with Laura just after this break.
So we're here with environmental reporter Laura Paskus, who most recently had a story called "The Canary in the Copper Mine is Dead" in the Santa Fe Reporter about 2 weeks ago. Laura, this story kind of centers around a law from the Environment Department, correct? That's really not much of a law at all, right?
Right. The New Mexico Environment Department was charged by the state legislature to come up with a new rule for how copper mines are regulated with respect to groundwater in the state, and they released a new rule this fall.
And what does that affect, the groundwater, like just coming from the mine itself, or like the waste products from the mines? What sort of thing contaminates the groundwater?
Right. So there's all sorts of different things that copper mines do that affect groundwater. The strip mines, the waste rock piles, there's also heap leach process, where they put chemicals over these piles of rocks to get the copper out from the bottom. So it's a water-intensive process, and it also leads to a lot of contamination from the chemicals they use, but also the metals that are leached out of the waste rock.
Where are these copper mines in New Mexico?
They're all down in the southwestern part of the state. There's three. And so if you've ever driven down to the Gila, you've probably driven past a really giant one on the side of the road that you can peer into there. But they're all down in the southwestern part of the state.
And so are they pretty large scale? Are they pretty... all three pretty big?
They're pretty big. The Tyrone mine, I think, is the biggest one, but I'm actually not sure. But the Tyrone mine has 8 strip mines, open pit mines, and then I think it's about 2,800 acres of waste rock piles and heap leach facilities.
So these are big mines with a lot of environmental impact to them, especially when it comes to the groundwater. And so what was the rule like before they changed it?
There was a settlement that the state and the copper mine, Freeport McMoRan is the company that owns the three mines. And the state and Freeport in 2010 had come to a settlement agreement where... everybody knows that copper mines pollute the groundwater. I mean, that's just a fact of the mining, and these mines have been there for a long time. So everybody acknowledges that is an issue, and, you know, we can't pick up and move these mines. But they had come to some agreement on new facilities where the company would essentially have to apply for what are called variances, what are basically exceptions to say, okay, we know that we're going to be polluting and we need this sort of special exemption from the state. And the State Water Quality Control Commission would consider it and grant it. And then they would have basically 5 years to be polluting and trying to figure out a way to make sure that didn't happen. And so Freeport and the state had come to this agreement and they were doing this exemption system. And now under the new rule, as it's been proposed by the New Mexico Environment Department, the company won't have to apply for these exceptions or variances anymore.
So they can just pollute without having to do anything.
Basically, yeah.
And then the way this came about is, I guess that's probably a huge part of the story. Like it wasn't the normal process. Like what's the normal process for changing these rules?
Right. So the normal process, which had been the legislature in 2009, had said, hey, let's make new rules for dairies and for copper mines. And so the dairy rule sort of, we won't get into that, but the dairy rule happened. And then with the copper rules, basically what happened was the state hired a recently retired groundwater bureau chief, this guy who worked for the state for like 25 years doing groundwater regulation and rules and making sure that groundwater is kept safe from contamination. So they hired him to come back on contract, and he spent 7 or 8 months working with stakeholders from environmental groups, from state and federal agencies, from the mining companies, and they all came up with this draft rule. And it was this draft rule that everybody agreed to. All the stakeholders in the process were like, okay, we can all live with this. And then it went to the New Mexico Environment Department senior management. And at that point in time, the rule suddenly incorporated all of these exemptions and commitments that Freeport had previously asked for, but the stakeholders had said, you know, we're not going to do that. That wasn't included. And then senior management included it all.
And the changes came from the Environment Department. Now, isn't that supposed to be the agency that kind of keeps a check and balance on the kind of mining that we're talking about here?
That's exactly what they're supposed to be doing. And I just want to say, too, like, I've been reporting on the Environment Department for, like, about a decade now. And the people who work there are like people who are pretty environmentally minded. You know, they're not.
These are
like,
the staffers. They're not the appointed officials.
Right. The staffers who've been there for, you know, some of them for decades. The attorneys, the bureau chiefs,
all the way down.
Your staff people.
All the way down the line.
Yeah. They're like people who care about things like groundwater and clean air and I think, you know, try to balance business interests with the environment. But their mandate is to protect the environment and public health.
But then when the new appointees come in, you know, like the difference between what Richardson wanted to have done versus what Martinez wanted to have done when she came in is pretty drastic, right?
It's pretty drastic. I kind of try to not be political because I'm a journalist, but also because I kind of don't even like Democrats or Republicans, but in this case, it's drastic. It's a huge difference.
It's impossible to report on it without noting the big difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, because Richardson, you know, maybe he wasn't as environmentally sound as he gets a lot of credit for, but what he was looking to try to do with like protecting the groundwater, that was in 2009 when they created the rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it would be under his administration.
Yeah, and I mean, even just other things that, aside from the groundwater, if you look at what Richardson was doing with climate change, the Environment Department was really making some big advancements on trying to figure out ways to deal with climate change, the causes and the impacts, and now we have a governor who basically doesn't even acknowledge that climate change is a human-caused thing that's happening, so it's pretty drastic.
So the law changed, and can you go back and describe a little bit, because it's strip mining that's primarily used here?
Yeah.
And how that can contaminate the groundwater, and what, you know, the law before would have done to stop that contamination, or curb it at least?
Yeah, so...
And what kind of contaminants there are, because, I mean, I don't know.
Okay, so yeah, so these big open pit copper mines, basically there's two different ways they do it. They scoop out the waste, like they scoop out the rock and try to find ore, and there's two different ways to separate it. You can do conventional mining where it's heated and sent to a smelter and that whole thing, and then the rock that you didn't use is put in these big waste rock piles, and then there's also heap leach mining where this sort of lower grade ore is piled up and then they put these chemicals on top of it and the metal leaches out from the bottom. And economically, it's in the copper mine's best interest to do a good job of collecting that stuff that comes out from the leach piles because there's metal in it. So they want to get the metal. So they're also able to kind of pick up the contamination as well. The big problem, as I understand it, is with the waste rock piles, which sit out there. And they've been unearthed, and so they're in these giant, humongous piles. And as it rains and there's runoff coming through the piles, the water draws out heavy metals within the rock. And so it's that heavy metal contamination that gets into the groundwater in addition to sort of these chemicals from the process. And the old rule basically, well, one of the things that the new rule does is you have your, like, say your waste rock pile or whatever it is that's your strip mine, whatever is contaminating the groundwater beneath, and you drill these monitoring wells to figure out where your contamination is, how far it's moving. And under the new rule, basically, the companies, as long as they're down gradient of the contamination, they don't have to drill them, like, right next to it. So as long as the contamination doesn't reach the monitoring well, which they can drill as far away as they want, then it's okay.
So it could be like 5 miles away.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like, of course, you wouldn't want it to be that far away, but there's nothing in the rule that says how far away it needs to be. All it says in the rule is that it needs to be down gradient.
So these are all like pretty big changes to what's happening. It can be bad. Like if it gets in a community's groundwater, then you can't drink it, right?
Right. And under New Mexico state law, like all the groundwater in the state belongs to the public. Like that's your groundwater and my groundwater. And so these state agencies, like the New Mexico Environment Department, that's supposed to be protecting
the groundwater.
They're protecting a public resource. It's not like it's the mining company's water and they can pollute it as they see fit.
And has there been any situations where, you know, groundwater near a community has been contaminated?
There was a huge settlement in 2009 or 2010 where Freeport paid the state of New Mexico, and I'm totally going to get this number wrong, but it's...
Just say a lot of money.
A lot of money. Many millions of dollars in settlement to the state for groundwater contamination.
And this is something that could get in, you know, get into your tap water. Get into your tap water, and that's a bad thing.
Yeah, in any future communities that might, you know, I mean, water is such a hugely important thing in New Mexico. But so it's protecting people now, but also people in the future.
It's much more serious than fluoride in the water.
Oh, the Santa Fe. You silly Santa Feans. I guess Portland also. But, but another thing I wanted to touch on briefly, I mean, because we have, you know, obviously, the big copper story, which go read Canary in the Coal Mine. We'll put the link up on the post.
Before we, I wanted to ask because there's you cited some people in the Environment Department who have since left because of the way it has changed. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there's been a pretty big exodus from the Environment Department. Some of it was when Martinez first came in, there was a shakeup of the bureau chiefs. Some were...
That's pretty usual, though, right?
Not the bureau chiefs.
Oh,
so
right.
there's the secretary that's political and that high up level,
and
then
the
there's
deputy.
The division people, the division directors. But under the division directors are the bureau chiefs, and they're the ones who've been there for like
those are career
decades.
Staffers. They're not
yeah.
appointed. Okay.
Yeah, they're not appointed. They don't get moved around. But Martinez moved a bunch of them around, including some left and some got moved into positions in which, like, you know, somebody would be leading the air quality bureau for years and years, and then they get for one example was the guy who had been in charge of, like, the radiation and overseeing WIP and everything got moved into food safety. Just crazy shakeups like that would make people leave in most instances. But there have also been a lot of attorneys who have left and just sort of like your regular staffers.
And what are you hearing any reason beyond the shakeup as to why people are leaving?
What I've heard from some sources is that it's hard to believe and trying to protect the environment and protect public health and to be in that department anymore.
And does like what happened with this copper rule, does that play into it too, that they feel like, you know, we come in, we follow the process, and then it's just changed by our bosses?
Yeah, and even, I mean, one of the attorney for one of the environmental groups that was involved in the process, like they spent hundreds of hours and like everybody put a ton of time into that stakeholder process and coming up with the rule. And as that attorney said, like, we were basically tricked. We're never gonna take part in a Martinez administration process again.
Do you? I believe they're in the Reynolds building. Have you ever been in there?
Mm-hmm.
They share the building with the equally dysfunctional Department of Health. So if you want to see some dysfunctional state government, go into the Harold Reynolds building on St. Francis.
Okay, I think that now we can, now that we've insulted two major parts of New Mexico government, we can move on to... another thing we want to touch on that's kind of been in the news lately is I know you've done a lot of reporting on uranium over the years, and real quick, can you just like give us a quick rundown of like why there's big why it's in the news now, basically?
Yeah, so there's a big uranium mine in the works for the area just outside of Grants, and the reason it's a big deal is that uranium mining was a big part of the Four Corners and its economy from like the 50s through the 80s. There was the big crash in the 80s, but
why was there a crash?
The demand for uranium went way down, and so the prices went way down, and then just within maybe the past decade or so, the prices have started going back up again. But the Navajo Nation and a lot of the tribes in the Four Corners really suffered negative environmental and public health impacts from uranium mining, and so they've taken a really strong stand against uranium mining.
And then this latest one, like you said, it's near Grant, it's near Mount Taylor also, which mm-hmm. is, what, that's the tallest peak in New Mexico?
No, Wheeler.
Oh, Wheeler Peak is. Okay. Never mind then. but it's a sacred site to many Native Americans, right?
Yeah, and like maybe 5 years ago, five tribes got together and asked that Mount Taylor be protected as a sacred, as a traditional cultural property. And they, I don't know, I mean, I feel like it was a really brave move for a lot of the tribes to talk publicly about why that area is sacred and why it deserves protection. And so this new mine that's planned is within the boundary of the area that tribes are saying is sacred.
And basically, they're going through the public comment period right now, and there's been protests. I've seen protests. You know, I think at New Mexico In Depth that you're doing some work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And is there any possibility of this being stopped, or is it just going to happen?
I kind of feel like federal agencies are required to take public comment, but I don't know that they're always required to listen to public comment or to take it into account and make changes. So I kind of feel like it would be pretty hard to stop that mine.
Yeah, the ball's already rolling there. And there's still problems with like the cleanup from, the 50s through the 80s. Like, mm-hmm. there's still, like we were talking about before the podcast, there's still some mines that haven't been cleaned up, right?
They call that legacy waste, right?
Yeah, and there's all kinds of clean there in the on the Navajo Nation in the Grants area. I mean, there's tons of remediation work that still needs to be done.
And is it ever going to get done?
I
know we're putting on the spot on stuff you haven't reported on in a while now.
I think.
Tell us who's going to win the Super Bowl.
I think that most of it will not get cleaned up to the standards that some of the communities wish it would be.
And I think that people would wish that it would be fully cleaned up.
So this is part of work you're doing for New Mexico In Depth, and you're working with them on a project about Native American issues. Can you talk about that a little bit, just briefly?
Yeah, it's an awesome project, and I am super excited to be working with Chip and Heath and Bryant Furlow. Bryant also did...
King of the IPRAs.
Right, the King of the IPRAs, and he also did a uranium story recently. So, yeah, New Mexico In Depth has a Native America project, and we're covering all sorts of issues, public health and environmental, and also just kind of cool stuff, too. I did an interview recently with the Navajo Nation's new poet laureate, Lucy Tapajanso. So there's all kinds of good stuff on the website.
So we can look for, you're doing short blog updates, right?
Mm-hmm.
So look for that for Native American land, which is pretty unreported on a lot of times.
Yeah, and that's at nmindepth.com. We at The Reporter are in a partnership with them. We're hoping to get some collaborations going soon as well. So I think that'll do it for this week. Thanks, Laura, for coming on.
Thanks, you guys.
You can read Laura's work at sfreporter.com and NM In Depth and many other publications too, right?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, and I'm Matthew Reichbach. You can read my work at nmtelegram.com. I'm the editor, and I run the thing there. And also, I write the Morning Word, which you should read every morning, over at nmtelegram or at sfreporter.com.
And I'm Joey Peters at the Santa Fe Reporter, and we'll be back next week.